Hello, Stephen.
Ernie, happy Christmas and Merry New Year to you.
You too, buddy. All right, I want to get, you know, your latest and everything, Middle East, Syria, Saudi Arabia. You can explain all about it, and here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Gonna be! Keller, your independence of me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, A, from the BEAU Tiful Studios of Freedoms with an S, Freedoms Phoenix of the Dark. I'm with Stephen Ledman. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read off Stephen Ledman's bio here, and he's also an author. He's done some book, Flashpoint in Ukraine, you know, and some others, but let's go ahead. He's award-winning, got all kinds of stuff, and we got limited time with him, maybe even more limited than we want, because he was born in 34 in Boston, Massachusetts. In 56, he received a BA from Harvard University. 2 years of U.S. Army service followed, then an MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania in 60. After working 7 years as a marketing research analyst, he joined the Ledman Group family business in 67. He remained there until retiring at the year end in 99. Writing on major world and national issues began in summer 05 on Freedom's Phoenix, man. Boy, he was getting it done. Then early 07, radio hosting followed. You know, I remember he and I have been on the same networks before and so on. Ledman now hosts a progressive radio news hour on the Progressive Radio Network 3 times weekly. Distinguished guests are featured, listen live or archived. Major world and national news are discussed. Ledman is a 2008 Project Censored winner, 2011 Mexican Journalist Club International Journalism Award recipient from the Presidente. So this is, you know, Stephen, you know, help me with the math here. How old does that make you?
Well, number one, Ernie, I thank you for acting as a PR agent for me. I greatly appreciate it. the math reads that I'm 84 years old. I'll be 85 next summer. And Father Time is catching up with me, but I've still got a lot of energy. I just don't have as much as I had years ago.
You know, Stephen, it is amazing. It's kind of like you're a news aggregator. You go through and you read all the stuff and you go, yeah, well, this is what I say about that. You know, here's what he said and this said and kind of put it, you piece it together and you paint a picture. Now, we may not always agree on the solution. There's not another government program I need. But, you know, but definitely you want to know what's up, you know, what they, them, those are saying. Yep, you know, Stephen's got it going on. All right. So instead of me, I'll say this.
I think we agree on one thing. We prefer peace to endless wars.
Yeah. I don't need another war. And that's one thing. And when Stephen first started, we started Freedom's Phoenix back in 05. And I remember early on, you know, that was kind of our policy. Look, if you're sincere and you want to write and share and do it, I don't care what your opinion is, as long as you're sincere and you're just not some, you know, regurgitating think tank of whatever the hell, and it's accurate and truth. You may have a different opinion about these facts, but don't be lying to me. Well, Stephen has never lied, as far as I can tell. This is what's happened. You know, don't tell me it didn't happen. This is what happened. So he's done a global research. I remember you doing a lot with them. You're doing radio. He wants to share in his retired years. It's what's been keeping you alive, in my opinion.
Well, nobody pays me for what I do. I do everything pro bono. And so nobody can say I'm in the tank for anybody because I'm not. We all make mistakes. I'm certain I make mistakes in things that I've written about. But I honestly try. I do not lie. I am not a liar. I have no incentive to lie about anything. I really want to spread what I believe is the truth about big issues so everybody knows them and everybody knows how our government in the USA is screwing us, to put it very bluntly.
Yeah, no, and this is the one thing. I printed out, you know, yeah, I had a bunch of your articles and stuff printed out that you, I mean, yeah, heck, it's not like you don't have enough every day. But the Syrian forces enter a strategically important Manbij, how do you say that? Reshuffling the deck chairs in Riyadh. We got that, you know, Africa free trade zone, you know, the whole freaking continent's going to be a free trade. That's of interest to me. But a lot of, and you got a bunch of other articles on the Middle East and Syria and so on. And I go, Donna, just see if he got a little bit of time for it. He can explain. Man, skip to the freaking end. You know, tell me what the hell is going on other than, this is kind of the gist. I did something on Syria yesterday. Trump says, we're out. All right, here we go. Well, the big thing, the war hawks and the chicken hawks and the neocons, and they're going, oh my God, you know, it's like, you know, the Iranians just got a straight shot to Hezbollah in Lebanon if they go. And I go, isn't Iraq like in the way? You know, yeah, but they're not going to stop anybody. So Iran is now having influence with Syria. Syria is now buds with Russia, and Turkey, you know, the Kurds that we've been using and abusing to do whatever heck we want. You know, we're just kind of, you know, screwing them now. And I'm going, what's really going on? And it seems to me that in all of this, I don't know if you know about this, but Genie Energy, which is Rumsfeld and Cheney and Rockefeller or Rothschilds and these guys found oil in the Golan Heights. I don't think they're going to be giving that up anytime soon. So there's.
Well, I did not know that.
Oh, man, you got to fight. All right, write this down. This will freak you out. Genie Energy, G-E-N-I-E Energy. The back in 13 to 15, Israel's Resources and Water, whatever the heck, group gave them permission to do test wells in the Golan Heights. They found enormous amounts of energy there, and they're so they're going. I'm Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld. Guess what? It's ours. So that
I do know this, Ernie. There is a lot of natural gas offshore in Palestinian waters. Offshore Gaza. It also goes right up the coastline, Mediterranean coastline, north into Lebanese waters. And over the years, there's been conflict a little bit. Not a war over this. A war with Lebanon about other stuff, but not a war over this that could get to a war at some point where Israel and Lebanon are claiming some of the same waters with gas. And with his gas, there's oil, and with his oil, there's gas. And there's a lot of money tied up in that. So Israel is stealing Palestinian oil and gas. And, Palestinians can't do anything about it. But Israel does everything it does with full support and encouragement from Washington.
Yeah, and you say Washington. Does that include Trump? I mean, I don't know. He's leaving Syria.
The whole kit and
caboodle.
What I call Republicans and undemocratic Dems, I lump them all into the same dirty barrel.
Well, it's they, them, those doing something. I don't know what role, you know, we got, and we're leaving Syria, and kind of Mattis is gone and all. So that's what I need you. But I really, 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 you got to, I'm not going to let you go on about anything else till you write down Genie Energy.
Oh, I've already done it. I wrote it down.
You're going to be so busy today.
I'm a step ahead of you, Ernie. Well, not ahead of you. I'm keeping up with you. I typed in my address bar, I typed in Genie Energy. I brought up a website, and I bookmarked it.
There you go. See, I'm telling you, this. If you didn't know this, you're going to be busy. This is, man, you're going to go, what the, how the hell did this bypass me?
Oh, I'm always busy. I'm not good at predictions.
Oh, Larry Summers. Larry Summers, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Rothschild. Need I go further? You feel me?
Indeed. The Rogues Gallery.
Okay, so now tell me, Trump, we're out of Syria. We're leaving. We're done. And after all the troops are out, we're eliminating air cover. And, you know, and Turkey was going, look, man, there's something going on where they go, look, we'll align with Russia. Screw you. Iran's doing whatever. We're lying about something. Tell me what the heck is going on. And there's a reshuffling going on in Saudi Arabia. You know, we're up against a break here now, but that's what, when we come back, you know, he's going to tell me all about it. You know, tell us all about it. Get your notes ready and stuff. I don't have to read the 15 gazillion articles that you've been writing every day, all day, you know, for years on this. Skip to the end with Stephen Ledman. When we come back in just a little bit. From the first letter of Captain Mark. History is full of flowery documents claiming to limit the power of the crown, but these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the predation. Limited government is a lie they use to keep us submissive. The crown cannot be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor its treaties, nor even its own rules. The essence of the crown is centralized violence, and I've had enough. That's why I raised my black banner. I am no revolutionary. My aim is not to reset the cycle of violence, but to break it. My aim is an evolved society, invisible to the crown. Not a new hierarchy, but decentralized networks with no central figure for the crown to target. If you want your servile life, keep it. But we will not submit to the crown's agenda. And when you are ready to stop being its beast of burden, ready for adventure and opportunity, join us at piratswithoutborders.com. Okay, Stephen, check this out. There is supposed to be more oil in the Golan Heights than Saudi Arabia.
Oh, come on. I mean, the Golan Heights isn't that big.
So?
How deep are they going to dig? I mean, if they go down to the center of the earth, my God, I mean, they might find an ocean down there.
We're going to find out. Here we go. This is a lot of this is about, you know, this pipeline from Qatar. It was one of the big issues, and then they won't do it, and damn it, and we need to have Syria because without Syria, we can't do the pipeline economically through wherever to go to Europe and get through Turkey and whatever, and Germany's dependency on Russian oil we could bypass if we could only get Syria to fall, and then we got the Golan Heights with Cheney and friends being a blah, 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 blah. It's all about
the
oil.
The real deal with Syria is, I've said this a number of times, the road to Tehran runs through Damascus. The real target is Iran, above all else in the Middle East. And the way you go after Iran is you isolate the country. So, you know, they took out Iraq. They want to take out Syria. They went to North Africa. They took out Libya. The war in Yemen going on. It's not Saudi Arabia's war. It's America's war. Since the Bush-Cheney regime, Ernie, since October 2001, America has been waging war on Libya, but you never hear anything about that in the major media. I mean, 17 years. Astonishing. It's going on forever. The Saudis are playing a big role in this, but it's America's war. And if America wanted the war ended, it would end probably by the end of the year.
Okay.
Are we on Iran?
No, not yet. We'll be back in just a little bit. You know, we got a minute. But the if I can get Stephen Ledman, you know, doing a little, just to scratch the surface, a little bit on Genie Energy. That'd be awesome.
God,
where have you been, man?
You rub the Genie and a lot of oil comes out.
Ooh, that's good. You already got a working title, man. All right, what are we looking at here? Let's see. Genie, you got, I don't know who Howard Jonas is, but he's kind of the head guy. But, you know, the Strategic Advisory Board is comprised of Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch, James Woolsey, CIA, Larry Summers, Bill Richardson, former governor of New Mexico, and Michael Steinhardt, Jacob Rothschild. I mean, come on!
Good Lord! I mean, you know, this is a sinister operation.
Yep. All right, here we're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we still got a little bit of holidays going here. Merry Christmas, Stephen.
Well, thank you, Ernie.
Happy New Year! We'll be right back. up for 19. I tell you, one of the things that we're doing is we're reformatting and doing kind of different and putting stuff up and whatever. Redid the studio, put a lot more capability in. We're going to be doing some long-form interviews that, you know, no interruption kind of put up. And definitely Stephen Lindman. We'll come up with some format, and we'll try and get you when you're all energied up and what time of day is most convenient for you. And it's going to be the interview with Stephen Lindman, because this is right where you live, man. It's all about pace. What do you say your primary objective is? Like, not war? I mean, you know, you kind of got a progressive, you know, bent to you, but I mean, you know, what is it that you're primarily focused on, Stephen?
Well, I put it in three words: peace, equity, and justice. And a few more words after that for everybody everywhere. I don't like the idea of a government serving only a small sliver of the nation's population, the privileged class, and screwing everybody else. That's not my idea of democracy, and that's not what democracy and rule of law principles and all the rest of it is all about. So that's my the progressive side of me. I want everybody treated equally. It doesn't mean that we ought to divvy up the wealth. Everybody gets an equal share. That's not what I'm saying. But the government should abide by the rule of law and should treat everybody equally and stop these horrendous wars.
I'm gonna send you, we did in the first hour, an economics video that was done by James Corbett, the Corbett Report. It was awesome. And it's everything encapsulated in what we've been advocating for. And it's just not, you can't have a central plan of what, you watch that, do the genie thing, you did your bit for the day. All right. Syria. Trump goes, and we're gone. You know, what's really going on? What do you think about it? Tell me everything.
Well, the issue is a lot more than Syria, and I don't know what Trump will do or what he won't do, but I do know this, Ernie, which is the single most important thing everybody should understand. However Trump or anybody else in Washington moves the pieces around on the chessboard, troops in Syria, moving them cross-border to Iraq or to another country in the Middle East or to Afghanistan, forget about all that. The only thing that matters is America's imperial agenda remains rock solid. The vast majority of Republicans and undemocratic Dems, as I call them, support America's imperial agenda, and it goes on, not missing a beat, whatever Trump will do or what he won't do. That's the key issue. And the heart of the imperial agenda are all these wars going on. I mean, they're going to continue. I mean, Trump is supporting them. I don't know what he says privately. I don't know what he tells his people or what they discuss in their private meetings, but Trump has gone along with all this. He inherited the wars from his predecessors, and he escalated them in Iraq. Mosul, the rape and destruction of Mosul, had nothing to do with liberating Mosul, had nothing to do with fighting ISIS that America created and supports. Never hear anything about that in the major media. Same thing in Syria, the rape and destruction of Raqqa in the north of the country. In both of these countries, killing tens of thousands of civilians, Iraqi civilians, Syrian civilians. This is Trump. I mean, the guy who said, why are we wasting all this money in these wars? This is what he did. He went along with it. He escalated war in Yemen. He's waging war in Somalia. You don't hear any reports about that. Libya is still a cauldron of endless violence. And the CIA is everywhere. ISIS and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, U.S.-created and supported terrorists, they're wherever America deploys these people. So this stuff is going to go on, whatever Trump may do or not do in Syria. And America has, what I've seen, 18 military bases in Syria, if you can imagine that. And my understanding is they're building two more. They're building at least one more, and they're building two new military bases in Iraq close to the Syrian border. If anybody thinks the Pentagon is going to walk away from these bases, they better have a real evaluation.
Stephen, hold on a second. We got a bad connection. Donna, call him right back. It's, you know, she's going to call. Go ahead and hang up. She's going to call you right back, okay?
Okay.
Let's do that. Yeah, she's going to call him right back. That's good stuff, good stuff, good stuff. I don't want to miss it and be all choppy and so on with that. So Donna's going to take care of that. Now, the thing is that this is get Stephen, I'm telling you. You know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of the guests that we have, and I go, hey, you need to know about this one thing. And they start working on that stuff, I'm going to send it to him right now. I'm going to put this economics. He's already on the economics. video. So, boom. I send that, and man, he starts to do it. Because his whole thing has been, we wanted to make sure that there is a philosophy behind it. It's so easy to understand. We got him. Okay. You there, Stephen?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Just back off of the receiver. I think it's your phone. It's, you know, chopping up a little bit or something. I can do the volume here. Just hold it away from your mouth a little bit more.
Okay.
All right, put that up. All right, there we go. All right. Go ahead and continue where you left off. All right, what this is really all about is what?
What it's really all about is continuing America's imperial agenda that began, it began in the middle of the 19th century, maybe even before that. Astonishing. It just picked up steam over the years and decades and generations. World War One was sort of America.
Pull away from your phone. It's you. Yeah, it's something wrong with your transmitter. I don't know. Let's find out.
Is this better, Ernie?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is this better?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I talk about advancing America's imperium. The agenda has been going on since at least America stole half of Mexico, including California, Arizona, where you are, Mexico, part of Colorado, the rest of it. I mean, just horrors. And why they didn't steal it all, I don't know. I mean, that was in the middle of the 19th century. Good Lord, but 170 years ago. And it's continued. World War One, in a sense, was America's coming out party, just partially, because the British Empire was still ruling the waves, as they like to put it. But World War Two was the real U.S. coming out party. It was the only major country other than South America wasn't armed. Australia got away, dodged a bullet. But all the major countries, the Western ones, and Japan, China, America was the only one that came out of World War Two unscathed. So America wanted to set the rules for how the rule would be waged. And the rules were America would rule the world, and every other country would be colonized and transformed into a U.S. vassal state. And over the years, wars became America's favorite strategy, beginning with Harry Truman, my God. Well, it began with Franklin Roosevelt getting into World War II, suckering Japan into attacking America, knowing they couldn't defeat America, but they got into it thinking the Americans would get tired of dying over and out of the world. So they give it up and they'll leave and leave Asia to us. Well, they didn't understand America's imperium. They sure do now. Japan has been a colony since 1940, U.S. colony since 1945. And the same goes for all the European countries.
We're just going to let Stephen go, man, and explain it to us. Into the break. All right, just keep going. Yeah, it's clicking out, and I don't, you know, it was fine earlier. It's just whenever we do this, it's the man. You know, the man is just, they don't like you talking to me, man.
Are we having trouble coming through again?
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of cutting in and out. I don't.
Those are the dark forces. They don't like either one of us, Ernie.
Yeah, it was fine to begin with, and then it doesn't surprise me, you know. But I want to, so just skip to the end on this. Let me ask some questions before you go on and freaking rant and on and what. Okay, the question is, Trump says we're leaving Syria. Why? Why the change? Why do you want to do this? Why?
Well, Trump is a geopolitical know-nothing. He's a businessman. He's a real estate guy. He's a television personality. He's America's first reality TV president. Just imagine that. He knows nothing about I know more about geopolitics than he knows. The only thing he has of me is he gets the CIA and the other briefings, so he has the inside scoop about what's going on.
Who cares? See, this is where you and I differ. I don't care what the inside scoop is. I don't need to know the scoop. The scoop don't matter. It's not our land. You know, peace out. Do what you want. We're gone. I don't need to know why.
About what he knows versus what I know.
It doesn't matter what
you
know. We're gone. It's not us to be there. It doesn't matter. Is that how he's thinking? He's like, don't care. I want to build a hotel on the good beaches of North Korea. I mean, you know, is that his mentality? I don't care.
Oh, I think that very much is his mentality. I think one of the main reasons he wants rapprochement with Russia, which I certainly support, but he wants to do business in Russia. I mean,
good.
Russia could be a honeypot for the Trump Corporation. So, I mean, he's trying to cut deals in Russia before, and when his tenure as president is over, he'd like to do business in Russia.
Good.
That's what's behind his wanting to be buddies with Vladimir Putin. I mean, he should want wanting world peace, but he wants it to make a buck.
Okay. Good. That's better than make a buck with a bomb. I mean, you know, bomb bucks. I'm wondering, you know, he goes, all right, we're leaving Syria. I mean, you can't give me a short answer of why?
I mean, well, I don't know if we're leaving Syria or not. Again, those 18 Pentagon bases. I just don't see the Pentagon walking away from those bases and handing them over to Syria.
Okay, Mattis. Why get rid of Mattis? Mattis didn't want, nope, we got it. He goes, nope, you're fired, you're done, leave. We're out of Syria, we're done. Next.
Well, that doesn't bother me at all. You know, the idea of referring to Mattis as a grown-up, there are no grown-ups there. I mean, they're all warriors. I mean, Mattis wasn't called Mad Dog for nothing. The butcher of Fallujah, Iraq, he likes killing people. He once said when he was commander in Iraq, he likes killing people. He likes beating them up. I mean, what kind of a grown-up is that? I mean, he's gone. There'll be another one just like him taking his place. That's the way the deal works. And whether it's Tillerson, the Secretary of State. I mean, he was a businessman like Trump. He knew more about geopolitics because he did a lot of business in countries overseas, wanting to sell oil in various countries and Exxon's drilling operations in various countries. So he knew more about geopolitics than Trump. But he was the wrong guy to be Secretary of State. You ought to pick somebody who knows something about geopolitics, which is not me. I wouldn't want any part of the job. But there will be nothing changing at all. Whatever happens in Syria or doesn't happen, things will go on exactly the same. But what I fear, Ernie,
I'm not going to interrupt, Stephen. We're just going to go right into, you know, when we come back and rejoin, so get over it. All right, keep going, man.
2019 may be more violent than 2018 and 17. I fear more war than we've had already, possibly a war on Iran. That's the one I fear most, because there's no question all of the stuff that America is doing to Iran is leading up to a war in the country if the things they're doing don't work. And the same stuff has been pulled on Iran for almost 40 years, and it never worked. So it's not going to work now, so what's the next step? War on the country. And if there's war in the country, there'll be missiles raining down on U.S. forces in the region. There'll be missiles hitting Israel. Maybe Russia will get involved.
Okay, I apologize. We're back. Hold on a second, Stephen. We're back. Hold on a second. There is a problem with the audio, the phone line. We tried calling him back and so on, but this is such good stuff. We're just going to suck it up and suffer it because I want to make sure Stephen gets to share this stuff with us. Now, the thing is that one thing I want to get to Riyadh. You're talking about, you know, what the heck is going on with the deck chair shuffling in Saudi Arabia. What are you talking about there?
Well, I think the main reason for these changes and who has what job in Saudi Arabia is to further solidify the power of the crown prince, the guy who is known as MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, who happens to be King Salman's favorite son. The CIA wants him out. Britain's intelligence, MI6, wants him out. That's the reason why they beat up on him in the comments that they made.
Okay, why do they want him out? Because he's a bad guy, bad PR, he's not being their toady, he doesn't do what they want. I mean, what's their motivation?
He's not their guy. He goes his own way. He does what he wants to do. America can't trust him. America wants a guy running Saudi Arabia who's their lackey, who'll do what America tells them to do. And MBS is unpredictable. You know, he'll go along with America on some things, and then he'll go off and do whatever he wants. You know, like locking up a bunch of Saudi Arabian officials in the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh to extort billions of dollars from them. Wow. for embarrassing the Prime Minister of Lebanon, summoning him to Riyadh, and then embarrassing him and so on, for pulling other stuff. I mean, Khashoggi is nothing. I mean, America doesn't care how many Khashoggis Saudi Arabia killed. I mean, they had these people all the time. That's not the issue. That's the pretext, not the issue.
That was a journalist. Oh my God, we can't have him kill journalists. You know when they, yeah, you know, I, you know, and for the U.S. and the British intelligence to go around and get all moral and stuff is to laugh. What role do you think did MI6 and U.S. intelligence have anything to do with that or not, or do we care?
We have to kill him, Khashoggi.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Khashoggi was working for the Washington Post, and the Washington Post is connected to the CIA.
Well, you know, who's
so the
not?
Last thing the CIA would do would be to kill a so-called journalist who's putting out copy that the CIA wants published.
Well, that was one of the reasons, I think, why he got... Yeah, he wasn't... he was doing... He's Saudi Arabian, and he's working for Western media,
he was
and he's doing what they want. He didn't like it.
Well, he was an insider in Saudi Arabia, and he became critical of what they were... Critical of what MBS was doing, for good reason. I mean, the CIA is critical. Senators in Washington are critical. Again, I mean, the CIA and a lot of people in Congress want this guy removed. They do not like the idea of this guy becoming... As crown prince, that's one thing. They do not want him becoming king. And I would not be surprised if he had an unfortunate accident, maybe a plane crash or something like that, and they got rid of him. The CIA can get rid of anybody they want to get rid of. So if I was MBS, I'm glad I'm not, but if I was, I would stay hunkered down with lots of protection, people I trusted around me, and never go to America because you might never get back home again.
Yeah, I'm, you know, well, what's it? It looks like Saudi Arabia is opening up just recently diplomatic relations with Syria. You know, the U.S. announces they're leaving. Well, everybody in the Middle East is going, hey, man, you're in the club again, man. Woohoo! What's up with that?
Well, I'm not sure about Saudi Arabia, but the UAE, which is just as bad as the Saudis, Bahrain, which is like a dependent of Saudi Arabia, there's a causeway that connects the two countries over a waterway, and Kuwait. Those three countries are reopening their embassies in Damascus. Maybe the Saudis will do it. There'll be a meeting in, I'm not certain where it'll be, but there'll be a meeting of the Arab League, 22 nations, next March. And one of the topics to be discussed is readmitting Syria back into the Arab League. Well, not everybody in the Arab League goes along with this. Egypt is for it, and the three countries I mentioned, they're for it, and probably other countries are for it. I don't know about the Saudis. The key is, what does America want?
Yeah, exactly. Thank
America
you. Saudi is going to say whatever Uncle Sam says. And how much influence does Saudi Arabia have over the U.S.? I mean, is there really any?
Zero influence over the U.S.
All right. So the fact that we got, you know, they got a bunch of our treasuries, or we got a bunch of their money, or the oil has to be in petrodollars and all that, that's just a symbiotic relationship of we're allowing you to be the crown anything.
Well, you know, the money is very important, the buying treasuries and U.S. investments and stocks and bonds and the rest of it. That's very important. But if the Saudis suddenly turn tail and start selling off the stuff they hold, well, you're going up against the CIA, and they can get rid of anybody they want, as I said, and they'll knock off the Saudi king or the crown prince or anybody else, and be sure that somebody is installed in power to serve U.S. interests. So I don't think the Saudis are going to want to jeopardize staying alive. They won't do that in a hurry. They want good relations with America.
You know, the one thing that we're going to be emphasizing in 19 a lot is just focusing on the power of public opinion, just general opinion. I just believe this about that, and I don't need a central plan of whatever, and us, whether we're negotiating with or for, or in my name, another country or a war or something, ass, screw you. I want my 13-year-old to be able to trade with a 13-year-old from Tehran, Riyadh, Damascus, whatever, and bite me. You know, this just opinion, certainly it's going to be backed up with technology, people being able to just communicate with each other directly. What do you think the influence of that's going to be? Are you still in the mindset that there's going to be nation states that's going to determine everything? And what's the power of opinion? And if not, then why the hell are you writing?
I've seen everything go to hell in a handbasket, more so under each new regime in Washington. And I call them regimes because it's a pejorative. Any nation that goes to war endlessly against other nations, they're a regime. That's what a regime really is. But each one, especially since the Clinton co-presidency, which is what it was, worse than Bush 1, and then Bush Cheney was worse than the Clintons, and Obama was worse than Bush Cheney, and Trump is worst of all. But when I say these people, it really is all the people around them. So Trump was co-opted, I think, before he ever entered the Oval Office. I think what it looked like, he was supposed to lose, number one, and Hillary was supposed to win. So but he made a mistake by winning. But after winning the election, I think Vladimir Putin, of all people, explained exactly what goes on in Washington, and he said something to this effect. When a new president comes into power, a man in dark suits, like the one I'm wearing, he said, show up with briefcases in the Oval Office, and they explain the facts of life to the new president. This is the way the system is. This is the way the country is run. This is what you'll do. And it's implied you'll either go along with the system or you won't be around very long. We'll get rid of you one way or another. I mean, either kill you like Jack Kennedy or get rid of you like trumping up Watergate, which was all phony and trumped up, but they got rid of Nixon that way. And they nearly got rid of Reagan by an assassination that didn't work. And they were very mad at him for signing the INF Treaty with Mikhail Gorbachev over 30 years ago. They didn't like that. It took all these years to get rid of it. Now Trump has gotten rid of it. Trump has given people the power structure in Washington most everything they want. Not everything, because he pulled this crap about trade wars with China, which is just very bad policy, and he's pissing off China more and more by attacking its companies and doing all kinds of stuff. There'll probably be some kind of a compromise between both countries, but Trump is not making it easy for China to come up with anything that would be good for both countries. So we'll have to see the way that plays out. So
well, China, you know, the one thing, we had China being ingrained into our society and got a free pass on every freaking thing and every, starting with certainly from Nixon, but certainly in the Clinton administration, and with the exchanges of everything. And Trump is like, nah. And then we have this, you know, Huawei company that makes micro. We went over it yesterday, and it was all about they're surveilling us through their phone. They're now making more phones than freaking iPhones. And I'm going, a lot of countries have said no. It's illegal to have those phones in our country. And Trump, the military has said, nope, you can't have any of those on our military bases. You can't have, and he's starting to threaten trade. You know, you got this big, giant telecommunication and not here and the 5G. Oh, that's it. Are we getting represented or not?
Second letter of Captain Mark.
Okay, I want to go ahead and focus on this. Your view of trade war or any kind of negotiation as a country with China is bad, and then so you're thinking...
No. Negotiations are fine. The problem with America is it doesn't negotiate. It demands. It says, this is the way it is. This is what we want. Take it or leave it. That's the way America negotiates. So I wrote an article saying diplomacy with Washington is a waste of time. And I wrote another article with the title, Toughness is the Only Language Washington Understands.
Hey Stephen, do you do Skype or Zoom or anything?
I'm sorry?
Can you do Skype?
I use it. Oh, you want to call me back on Skype?
Can we? Donna, come over and let's do that real quick in this break. It's just so bad. Is your Skype working or you got it turned on?
My Skype audio works fine.
Okay. Are you?
My address is Stephen, Stephen.
Stephen.
J. All lowercase.
Hold on a second. Donna's putting it in.
All lowercase. Stephen, Stephen. J. Lendman. And you send me a request and I'll accept.
There he is. Okay, hold on just a second. She's going to try and connect.
That's what we should have done. 30 minutes. I said I'd be on for 30 minutes. We'll finish the hour.
I knew better, you know. Anyway, do you have it turned on?
I've got it turned on. Yeah, here it is. There you go.
Here we go. Can you hear me?
Okay, there we go. You got it?
Yeah. I just disconnected my phone.
Oh, yeah. God, that's so much better. Thank you.
Yeah, my Skype audio works fine, but if I try to go on video, it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's fine. I want to get all this good, but man, it was just killing the audience. They're going, oh, make it stop, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who knows? Oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. Okay. Terrible. Just terrible.
All right. Now, it's so distracting. It's hard to, you know, we get off on, you know, different stuff. Now, this is what I want to make sure.
One thing. You want to go a little longer because of all this audio trouble?
Yeah, I got guests for the next hour, but we can go like another 20 minutes. So we'll just go, you know, till like, you know, four after the hour or something. So we got plenty here. See, my thing is that you're so against the particular institutions and or particular presidents or particular policies or something. And I take a much larger view of, I don't give a crap what they do. You know, do I even want the United States negotiating with anybody on my behalf? I, you know, let me pick. I'll pick who I do business with and how I, you know, do and whatever. I mean, I can see some. See, I hate when they, you know, national interest. Well, they, you know, they got, you know, surveillance phones. If they're doing national, I go, well, if there wasn't a national, if they're just an individual, then it's kind of, you know, who cares? I mean, I choose privacy if I had the freaking option to. If you weren't eliminating that, you can't have this phone because it's private and secure and encrypted and whatever, because then we can't spy on you. But we don't want them to spy on you, you know, without us spying on you. And if the Chinese spy on you, well, as long as we get a feed from them too, then I guess it's okay. I mean, it's just nation state versus nation state, and the individual gets lost in the whole thing.
Well, I agree with you. You know, when elephants rumble, the grass gets trampled. I mean, that's what you're really saying.
Your independence with Ernest Hancock.
Okay, we went to Skype and he got it turned on and done the thing. God, man, freaking that was annoying. But so I appreciate you sticking on with me, Stephen. But, you know, this is, you know, skip to the end on this. You've been following the administration individuals. I got one question. John Bolton, who the hell is this guy being up there in the Trump administration? Who's he representing? And then we find out that when they arrested the, you know, China Princess, what's her name, the granddaughter of the founder of Huawei Industries, that's a gazillionaire that make more smartphones than freaking iPhone now, and they used buds with Chairman Mao back in the day, and they're state-sponsored, and everybody's required to be a surveillance for the People's Republic of, and all that kind of, she's going to take over the company, and then U.S. goes, hey, Canada, we'd like her arrested in Vancouver. Yeah, not a problem, man, we got her. And I'm going, whoa, man, if they didn't trigger, you know, tickle and freaking poke the chest of the dragon there. And then you find out it happens while Trump was having dinner with Xi or whatever his name is, the prime minister, yes, head guy of China. And he didn't know it. And then you find out John Bolton did know it. And I'm going, who the hell's in charge of this thing?
Well, I mean, of course, Bolton's the national security advisor. He and Pompeo run the Trump regime's geopolitical agenda. They're the ones who make decisions on war and peace and everything else. And I got to say this, too. As far as China goes, the so-called trade war, U.S. trade war with China, has really got little or nothing to do with the trade deficit. It's got everything to do with America wanting to undermine China's attempt to become an economic, industrial, and technological power, which is the way the direction is heading in. I mean, China is growing strong. Its growth may be a little slower now than earlier, but it'll pick up steam ahead at some point. And China uses its resources effectively and efficiently, and the reason for the big trade deficit isn't China. It's because U.S. corporations have offshored their operations to low-wage countries, China and Bangladesh and Thailand and Vietnam and all these other countries. So U.S. corporations are to blame for the trade deficit, not China or any of these other countries.
No, U.S. freaking policy of making it expensive that I have to move to be competitive is to blame. And then here we have Macron in France, and his biggest, you know, regret being Mr. Banker is he goes, yeah, I, you know, we have to get cheap labor for our, you know, that's all about the immigrants. We need some cheap labor and the lower standards of our guys so we can have cheap labor for corporations and cheap labor so you don't go anywhere else because we got cheap labor. I mean, this is the whole thing that they keep screaming about immigration is so they can have cheap labor. And I'm going, you know, you have more productivity, more automation, more money making if you have companies here in the U.S. without the government in the freaking way. It's cheaper to stay here. if you get out of the way. What the hell you think they're going these other places? And then if you don't do away with these expensive regulations, environmental, and all this other crap they just keep piling on, then you need cheap immigrant labor to come in. Then we got to have a minimum wage that keeps getting raised, and universal basic income. And you know, I mean, get the freaking government out of the way. That's not even on your radar screen, Stephen.
Well, I'm for getting the government out of the way on the issues that matter most to me, like bullying other nations, which is what America does most in terms of.
Because we keep meddling in all this stuff. Quit. Just stop. You know, America be fine. Freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? And we keep getting away from that. And I'm going, it's so obvious to me, and I'm hoping a lot of other people. And after you watch, do the research on Gini and watch the economics thing from Corbett, you'll be one step closer, Stephen. I'm winning you over, man. It's taken me a decade, but I mean, you know, you're going to die a libertarian. That's just the way it's going to be, man. You know,
Ernie, there was a time in America long ago when I was a young kid growing up where America was the industrial powerhouse until it offshored most of its good jobs to low
wage. Why did it offshore?
Well, for cheaper labor.
Now, cheaper cost, lower overhead. It's not just labor. America is very productive. You know, the people are very productive. You know,
labor is the big cost. That's far and away.
Yeah, we're going robots. What's your, you done any evaluation on the automation of factories and stuff?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of robotization of U.S. factories. I guess that's technology on the march, and there's nothing you're going to do to stop that. Mm-hmm. But instead of wonderful jobs that used to be in America many years ago when I grew up, now people are hamburg flippers, or they work in warehouses for Amazon or Target or companies like that.
Yeah, well, the hamburger flippers and the warehouses are going to get automated too. Now what?
Oh, good Lord, what did I do to myself? Oh, I cut myself. Good Lord.
Oh!
I'm so excited I cut myself. Well, I'll fix that up after we go off here. I scratched myself and opened up a wound. My goodness.
Battle wounds. That'd be something to be proud of.
Where were we?
We'll get some first aid on it. Don't go get infected and you did it on this show and we lose Steven. I mean, take care of yourself, man.
Oh, good heavens. Yeah, I got infected on with Ernie Hancock. Oh, good Lord Almighty.
Yeah, I say infection, the injection of the freedom infection into the bone marrow of Steven Ledman, for which there is no cure.
Oh, indeed. Anyway, I like the America that I grew up in. The only wonderful period in America was at the end. It was in summer, September 1945, really a little before that, the war ended, before it officially ended, to June 2050, when Harry Truman decided he was going to begin America's imperial rampaging overseas and attack North Korea. North Korea didn't attack South Korea. South Korea attacked North Korea. But of course, the way the history books read, it's the opposite of that. Well, it wasn't. So that was the parade of endless wars beginning in Southeast Asia and the rest of it. Well, America was a wonderful place. Companies made a lot of money. The stock market moved up. Everything was fine. Americans had good jobs. They made good money. They had good benefits. That's the kind of country I'd like to see again.
And one of the parents stayed home.
Well, my mother stayed home.
Well, I don't care who stays home. Somebody stays home. Donna can make more money and do it. Peace out, man. I'd love to homeschool and, you know, take care of and do it. I don't have a problem with that. You know, I'm not, you know, maybe the kids would rather have mom home. But, you know, that's not the point. Single parent income was possible. It's not possible now unless, of course, have a high-paying job and so on, which, you know, fortunately, some of our children, they're able to have, two of our four kids, the wife stays home. You know, my daughter and my daughter-in-law, you know, they say, and it's great. It's great. I'd much rather have that. But the point is that it's not the common circumstance that we have here. And I remember my generation growing up in the 70s, you know, the term latchkey kids. And then that was the Equal Rights Amendment. We got to get, we need to have, you know, equality for women in the workforce, which what was the goal? It was to get women in the workforce so that the, you know, the mandatory youth indoctrination camps raise your kids and you got the women there working to pay the taxes. This is all orchestrated. This was on freaking purpose, Stephen. And I'm just, that this ripping of society down to the getting into the family unit was by design. And I'm going, why? How? Well, I tell you how. It's from the central planning of whatever the hell.
I'm for equal rights for everybody, men, women, and everybody else. And if women want careers, they have as much a right to a career as a man.
Sure. But not because out of necessity, not mandated, not required, not, you know, orchestrated and economically engineered that they have to so you can put food on your family.
Well, I agree with you there. That people should want a career because they want one, not because they have to have one. But several of my doctors are women. My accountant for many years before she retired was a woman. In my own small business, we had women. I work with women just the same as I work with men. It was wonderful. I saw no difference at all. And again, I mean, I'm all for this. My mother actually worked a little bit at times. But when I was a little boy growing up, she did not. She was always home. And I'd come home for lunch and she'd make lunch for me. Stuff like that.
How much of a benefit you think that was on your life and your generation having mom at home?
Well, as a boy growing up, I liked having that, although I imagine I could have gotten along. Once I began, before I went to school, it would have been hard not having my mother at home. But once I went to school, I was away at school until the middle of the afternoon. So I could have gotten along just fine if my mother was working, but she did not have to work.
Yep. No, we're going to keep talking with Stephen a little bit. I want to, you know, see what he's working on now, what he thinks the future is on these wars and what's going on. But there's a philosophical difference, you know, that we have on where, you know, it's like they're not doing it right. And I'm going, there is no doing it right. I don't want them doing it. So that's the difference between Stephen and I. You know, Stephen, you know, what's some of the things that, you know, got your attention you think you're going to be writing on the rest of the, you know, this next coming week? What's got your attention?
Well, I don't know what's going to be happening beyond this very moment, Ernie, but I'll certainly be writing about the stuff going on overseas. If there are breaking developments in Syria, I'll write about that. There may be more stuff about China, and I'll write about that. I wrote an article this morning called China's Outreach versus America versus America First. A big difference between China. China uses carrots to win favors from other governments, and America uses sticks.
America's, we got a freaking aircraft carrier, and China's going, hey, man, we got a suitcase full of money. Which would you rather have?
Well, they'd rather have the money, that's for sure. But they're worried about the aircraft carrier and the bombers and everything else.
Well,
but
China, they're repossessing. You know, this is awesome. You know, usually the INF, they'll go, well, how did our oil get underneath your sand? You know, we used it to, you know, guarantee the loan of build your port or airport or something. And now turn their people into slaves and tax, and they'll extend it and more interest and blah, blah, blah. But what did China do? They just repossessed the port. They go, it's ours now. I'm going, yeah, that might be a better way of doing it.
They have a very effective business model. Good Lord, my phone is ringing. Let me cut it off. Phone ringing while I'm on here. I love that.
That doesn't matter. They can't understand you anyway. Okay, I'm going to put in this. China, port, what was it? It was Kenya, I think, or somewhere. Let me see.
China, I think, owns the Israeli port in Haifa. Either owns it or runs it.
Oh, yeah, that was one thing. And U.S. Warships are going, maybe we don't go in there anymore. All right, here's the headline. When was this? 27th. What is today? Yeah, it was yesterday. China to take over Kenya's largest port over unpaid Chinese loan. After years of benevolent handouts to various African countries by Beijing, all of which, however, came in the form of loans, of which few have led to viable long-term projects and cash flow-generating assets, and led to accusations that China is pursuing a new colonialism of the African continent and, more recently, nations along the One Belt, One Road corridor. China is demonstrating to the world what happens when its debtors refuse to pay up. But first, a brief detour. Readers will recall that China's ambitions for Africa are hardly new and were discussed here over 6 years, yada, 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 yada. So they got all of this investment all over Africa. And all of a sudden, Kenya goes, we didn't pay it. We don't want to pay it. We can't pay it. You know, whatever. So as it turns out, the official was not exactly telling the truth, because far from handing out free money, the African Stand reports that China is likely to take over Kenya's lucrative Mombasa port if Kenya Railways Corporation defaults on its loan from Exim Bank of China. So they put up collateral, they do whatever, and they said, yep, you didn't pay it. It's ours now. Peace. And they go, yeah, but we, hey, aircraft carrier. What do you think we've been building these aircraft carriers? We give a crap about the U.S., you know? So I'm going, he goes, this is Africa's going to be a thing, man. And they're going to do it differently. They're going to say, no, we're not going to just, you know, keep continuing to refinance or push. We're taking it. You know, the asset, it's ours now. Now what? What are you going to do about it?
Well, Africa is really off the radar in the major media, but Africa could be a major war zone.
Big.
With China looking to entrench itself in the continent, and America wants to entrench itself in the continent, and that's what AFRICOM is all about, the command, the military command in Africa, which I think is in Djibouti. I think the headquarters is in Germany, but there's something in Djibouti as well, and I mean, it could really be a clash, but China's approach in Africa is really with carrots, going in and making investments. I didn't know anything about repossessing the Kenyan port.
Yeah, go take a look at that. That's awesome. But you see, you got to look at what the deal was. I mean, I'm sure you'll have a knee jerk of damn near those sons of bitches are taking. I'm going, look, man, what was the deal? Did you sign it or not? I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing. And they're going to, and they've been doing this all over Africa. They don't have to do anything. They built it, all this stuff, with their money. How are they going to get a port? How are they going to get a base? How are they going to get a mine? How are they going to get a railroad? How are they going to get all that in Africa? They just give the countries the money, have them do it. They don't pay it back. They repossess it. Hell, they didn't even have to, you know, fight a bunch of tribal wars or nothing. They already did it. That's an awesome idea. If you want to conquer Africa, that's how they did it, with a suitcase.
I don't think they repossessed too many things.
Not yet. Here it comes. This is just a prelude.
Maybe one day, but it's not just Africa. China is doing this all over the world, especially in its part of the world, with Asian countries. But it really is making allies in Asia very, very slowly. You know, America has its grip on Asian countries, you know, in China's backyard, but China is incrementally...
Look at it from a business perspective, Stephen. They have what? They built this entire infrastructure all over Africa, and what happens when the economy takes a dump here in the next yesterday, and when it goes, what's going to happen? You can't pay it, it's ours now. This is awesome. This is amazing. Well, this is long-term thinking here. Hey, I got somebody here, and I got to get to my next guest on. Stephen, we got to do it more often, man.
Ernie, I'm delighted to do it anytime. It's been a long time, and it was great to be on with you this morning. Next time, let's do it on Skype.
Yeah. That I didn't know that was an option. We should have done that at the beginning, especially when we had problems. All right, peace, brother. I got to go.
Okay, Happy New Year.
You too, buddy. Bye.
Thanks.